I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
What a silly season it has been, and it's only going to heat up more. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Spits and Suds. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. Got a good one today. Your questions, our answers, opinions galore. Robert Tiffin, starsthoughts.com. The best of the best joins us in just a moment. First, let's talk about those guys at the on-time experts. Speaking of great, Steven Meserve of 100 Degree Hockey, I've told this story before. He was getting his garage fixed, called the company, and they said, absolutely, the technician will be there sometime between 9 and 5. Steven leans over to his wife and says, I wish the on-time experts did garage work. And he's right, because when you go with the on-time experts, you get same-day service guaranteed. And what does that mean? I can just speak from my personal experience. Here's what happened. I ordered an AC cleaning, and I also wanted them to check one of my rooms. It was a couple degrees off from the rest of the rooms. So I made the appointment online, theontimeexperts.com. They confirmed the appointment with me. And then on that day, I got three calls updating me on the progress of the technician, to the point the technician showed up 20 minutes early. I could walk my dogs. I could run my errands. I could go about my day because they were keeping me informed. When they showed up, they made sure that their slippers were on so no dust got in my house. A thorough inspection and cleaning. A couple of things I like to point out. They had to climb over my AC system because it was installed wrong. And they did that. They made the extra effort. They sat me down and said, you know what, Gavin? This part is going to need to be replaced in the future. They could have said now, and I would have said, well, please replace it then. But they said, in the future, we'll keep an eye on it, but at least we now have notes and we know how to attack your AC system if something goes wrong. They also recommended a different air filter. And they said, we have one on the truck, but let's check Amazon. And you know what? It was cheaper on Amazon. So I went through Amazon. So right there are two examples of them going the extra effort and not gouging me for money. And that's why I'm a customer for life. So take advantage of that $59 first time special HVAC cleaning. I promise you it's a thorough cleaning. Dust, debris, it all adds up. Put years back on your AC system and make sure it's working at high efficiency. $99 first floor drain cleaning. Nothing better than running your sink and that, oh, it goes down smooth, especially those bathroom sinks. Get them all cleaned. It's the on-time experts at theontimeexperts.com. Great to have Robert Tiffin with us. Thanks to all of you for your questions. This is a great collab with Spits and Suds and one of my favorite sites, starsthoughts.com. Please subscribe and support Robert. He's an independent reporter on the scene who has done amazing work covering our Dallas Stars. He goes on road trips. Just a great story. And obviously he has that YouTube channel with Sean Shapiro, two of our favorites, called Algorithmically Incorrect. A new episode is out right now. The only thing I feel bad for, Robert, is not this past week, but the week prior, Sean Shapiro actually called you Gavin, and I apologize for the downgrade, my friend.
That must have meant I sounded really professional and like I knew what I was doing in front of a microphone. So I took it as a compliment personally, but you know,
I'm just going to chalk it up to not thinking of me. He was thinking of Gavin McKenna because of the upcoming NHL draft. We'll use that as an excuse.
You know? He was thinking who's number one? Robert's number one, by which I mean Gavin. Ah, same thing.
Yep. See, there we go.
The logic is impeccable. Yes,
absolutely. How are you this off season? You don't get an off season.
I'm targeting right now, kind of mid-July for some time to travel a little bit. I took a quick trip with some friends over the weekend up to Oklahoma. So that was actually a nice little trip up there. I haven't really spent much time in Oklahoma. So that was a fun little trip with a couple of buddies. We try to do a trip every summer back when we worked at a school together. Summer was the only time we all had off pretty much during the year. So the off season is less predictable, but generally speaking, you know, NHL executives like off seasons too. So you can usually take that later July, August, you know, they used to call it cottage season, as the your best shot at, I guess, at having some downtime. But you know, the laptop's always with me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're like hiking in the woods, checking, you know, if you have Wi-Fi.
I try to, honestly, I kind of decided one of the benefits of doing things the way I do with Stars Thoughts, at least, is being able to make decisions that allow me not to have to be plugged into my phone all the time.
Nice.
I don't think that's the healthiest thing for me to do. And it's nice to be able to not feel the pressure of, oh, I have to have the first take on this thing at all times. I try to write pretty quickly about breaking stuff, but it's been nice to kind of not always have that pressure on me. Even if it's hard to resist sometimes the thrall of no, you gotta get on board. This is a big thing that just happened.
One of the things Sean and I have talked about is that the NHL is following the NFL's lead in that it's becoming a year-round situation. I mean, the NHL specifically, I'll talk about 105.3 The Fan. Our guys are talking
great radio about, station. I hear great things about that place.
Robert is a regular on our midday show, the KNC Masterpiece. And I mean, a lot of hockey being talked, specifically Jason Robertson and what the Stars should do. And I think that means hockey's arrived here in DFW. But honestly, nationally, the NHL is making a lot of headlines this offseason.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Like, the league is in a good place. All the viewership numbers from the Stanley Cup final in the U.S., at least, I should say, they were actually not great in Canada.
Yeah. But
in the U.S. TV markets, where there are obviously a lot more people, so it makes the advertisers happy. The TV ratings for the Stanley Cup final, Vegas, Carolina, were actually very, very strong.
Incredible.
Some people would have thought, oh, those aren't, you know, it's not New York or L.A. or Chicago or whatever. But it was really strong. And also, it's worth pointing out, it was a really, really great series, too. Like, I'm not one that always pumps the tires of the NHL necessarily just to do it. But that was a really entertaining series, pretty much every single game of it. So it was kind of the perfect storm where since the Four Nations, almost 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, I guess, momentum's really built for the NHL. And it feels like that combined with headlines. I mean, Brady Tkachuk, I think that's a name that a lot of fans, like casual fans, know a lot better since the Four Nations.
Absolutely.
That's a big, big trade and caught a lot of headlines, like you said.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing.
And the thing about it is these headlines, you're right, have been headlines that the non-diehard hockey fan can embrace, like the potential expansion to Austin and Houston. That's something that affects us in Texas. So obviously that's a big headline. And, you know, then the questions become, can Texas support another market? Like, you know, it spreads nationwide. And then you look, does it spread in Canada? Why can't Canada get another team? You know, so there, you're right. I love the headlines that are coming out, including Greg Wyshynski this morning regarding Jason Robertson. He talked to one NHL executive. He put out on Twitter/X. And he said this executive inquired about Robertson and said the Dallas Stars were seeking a Rantanen package back for the restricted free agent winger. It was Wyshynski goes into the deal, two protected first rounders, 2/3, and a second year center Logan Stankoven. So that was the deal to recap. And I mean, I think that's interesting, but why not ask big? Because you're giving big.
I think that's what you should be doing. It's certainly, you know, if you're in the Stars position and you look at all the potential ways the Jason Robertson thing could play out, which could happen for all I know, it could happen while we're talking right now. You have to be prepared for everything. And that means if truly you can't find a number that works for both sides, then yeah, pivoting to a trade is probably the way to ensure you have the most control over keeping the team really, really competitive and in their Stanley Cup window. Really, it's not just about being competitive. It's about trying to win a championship. And as much as maybe you could say, and I've said before, that getting offer sheeted for Jason Robertson and getting 4 first round draft picks, especially because they'd be unprotected. The team can't, you know, do the top 10 protection things teams love to do. So if the team that Offersheet Robertson missed the playoffs in any of those 4 years, that first rounder could be a lottery pick. It could shoot up to one of the top three picks in the draft. I mean, you could get another Miro Heiskanen, right? There are reasons why an offer sheet would not be the worst thing in the world, but it does have uncertainty, especially if you might want to try to flip one of those picks or more than one of those picks for a player to help now. That still could be different than a player like Robertson that helps another team now. He really should command a package that the Stars can kind of tailor more to their liking than having to go through the step of, okay, he gets offer sheeted. Now we have these picks to turn around. It just makes more sense for the Stars to be prepared for a trade. And it certainly makes sense in a really thin, unrestricted free agent market for them to ask a king's ransom. I mean, we saw what Bo Byram got the other day in trade for Chicago. I think there's every reason to think Jason Robertson is the premier asset left out there that even, you know, and who knows, maybe he'll get re-signed by Dallas. They should be asking for the world for him. And honestly, there are some teams that would probably be willing to give him that. So we'll see how it works out.
By the way, I'm surprised Chicago makes that deal without some kind of extension.
I'm sure there was an understanding. You don't do a deal like that without some kind of understanding.
I would hope, right.
So I would expect that when the calendar flips over to July 1, maybe what we see something announced pretty quickly, because yeah, that's a trade for a number one franchise defenseman, or that they hope he'll be. So there's no way they would do that without a very clear understanding that there's something there. So I'm sure that there's something there, and Byron will be signed. It'll probably be for a lot of money. I mean, Thomas Harley's deal is probably not gonna be a bad comparison for what Byram gets. That would be my guess. It could even be 11 or 12. Wouldn't shock me if Byram signs for 11 or 12 million, which is insane. Wow. But it's where the market's going.
That's where the market is going. Yeah. We'll get to your questions in a second. You guys came up with some great questions and some detailed questions for Robert. I threw this out with Sean the other day, and I used Steve Staios as an example, and I thought it was really smart, the trade they made with San Jose, getting Eklund. I think that's a really nice pairing on that first line with Stützle. But wanted to add, everyone talks about like them being aggressive Senators and maybe making an offer sheet to Jason Robertson. What I said to Sean is Maverick Bork is semi from that area. You could really cause the Stars to scramble if they say through an offer sheet of $4 to $5 million a year for 4 or 5 years to Maverick Bork. And Ottawa, I think, would only have to give up, what, a third rounder? It's not too much compensation. I'd have to check on that. But, you know, that would be a nice piece for Ottawa to get. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I believe the Stars are not going to put themselves in a position to let Maverick Bork get offer sheeted. I think that's been one of the big factors that's probably pushing the timeline on the Jason Robertson decision. You don't know how much money you have for Bork, and you know, by extension, you don't know what kind of deal you can offer Bork. Is it going to be a short bridge deal and try to do another 1 year deal for cheaper? Or do you want to sign him to, you know, a long term, a Wyatt Johnston type deal? Wouldn't be for that much money, but it would be for a healthy amount. What can you do with Bork is all dictated by what happens with Jason Robertson. So that's another reason I think they want to get this Jason Robertson situation figured out. By the weekend at the latest, and maybe even sooner ahead of the draft, because the draft is also a thing where that all the assets that go in the draft, those draft picks are as well scouted as any draft pick will ever be right ahead of the draft. So it's easier to make trades at this time before teams have reached UFA and, you know, used up all of their cap space. So I just personally believe, yes, you're absolutely right. The Senators would love to get Bork. A lot of teams would love to get Bork that price, even for a second round pick. Heck, even for a first round pick, getting a guaranteed, a guy who just scored 20 goals in his early 20s in the NHL in Maverick Bork, that yes, every team would love to get him right now. And they I think almost any team would trade a first rounder, you know, outside of maybe the top five or top 10 for Bork. So certainly the offer sheet compensation, which, like you mentioned, I think if it's like over four something, I'd have to look at the thresholds, but it's like a third or second round pick. So yeah, absolutely. That's a danger from a lot of teams, including the Senators, and the Stars know that. So I'm convinced that whatever they work out with Robertson, whether it's re-signing or trading, they have the plan for Bork factored into that. So I just don't see them getting offer sheeted for Bork. I don't see them letting themselves let that happen.
I think it's been great for Stars fans to throw out trade scenarios. I think when Stars fans play GM, as frustrating as it might be for some other fans, the fact is when you play GM, you're engaged. And I love the fact that we have a fan base now that is completely engaged with the players, with the organization to throw this out, because this was not always the case. The other thing I want to remind Stars fans of, the fact that Dylan Larkin has the Stars as far as consideration, according to reports, that's a beautiful thing. The Stars are always in the conversation, and that says a lot about Jim Nill and the organization. So just a couple of reminders, yeah. You know, the sky is not falling. Like Robert said, they could sign Robertson during this podcast and then it's all for naught, you know, but it is fun speculating. All right, let's go through some of these questions. Marcia, hey,
Gavin, really quickly before we get into that, because I love those 2 points you just made. And the other thing I want to say is I experienced this thing with the Stars, with Stars fans loving to play armchair GM. I just wrote a piece on Stars. I guess it's kind of a plug, but genuinely, I think it's awesome, because there have been times in the past, I think Mike Milbury and other people, you know, 10 or 20 years ago were saying, oh, these fans, you know, play NHL on their Nintendos and they think they can do this trade, but it's way trickier. Fans are way smarter than that. Like fans are looking at, even though the league doesn't want to publish salary cap information in a centralized location, places like Puckpedia do that. And I wrote a piece of StarSots the other day, just looking at all the salary cap, like how they got into this salary cap crunch, all the decisions from the Tyler Seguin extension way back in 2018 to the Jake Oettinger deal, everything in between, kind of what those decisions looked like at the time, whether there could have been a bridge or an earlier extension, what the competition was, what their needs were. It's a long, long piece that went way longer than I meant to. I think it's like a half hour read. But in the comments of that, there have been tons of people who have like come up with really reasonable points or alternatives about, like, well, yes, but maybe at this time, if they'd done this or tried to extend this, it would have, yeah, the cap would have gone up to here. And maybe this is like some added compensation. Fans are really way smarter than a lot of people tend to give them credit for when it comes to doing GM stuff like this. Sure, they don't know everything, so it's important to have that grain of salt. But like you said, it's always better to have people engaged and really thinking through these things than it is to have people, you know, back in the dark days of 30 years ago where this information wasn't even public.
Right. The one thing I did mention on the podcast, though, that I do want Stars fans to think about, position flex is at an all-time high in that, you know, what is a center nowadays and stuff. I completely get that. But I want people to understand, if Robertson goes elsewhere, a lot of the people you're saying coming back are centers, which is absolutely and incredibly up the middle is so important. However...
Yeah, just ask Minnesota. They'd love to get some centers.
Yes, absolutely. But at some point, you have to realize if Jason Robertson leaves this team, you have Jamie Benn as a left winger. And at some point, you're like, all right, you need a true left wing. And the counter to that, some people say, well, is Alex Ovechkin a true left wing? Well, no, but he's Alex Ovechkin too. And that's special. So to me, I would like to see a true wing come back in a deal, and or then they go out and get, you know, a true wing, because it's not as, once again, I understand center to left wing, it can be done. They tried it with Duchesne. They tried it with many people on this team, but there is something to be said for strength at position too.
Yeah. And it's such a tricky thing. I remember talking about this last year with a couple of players in the Stars. And I asked them about the righty lefty center and winger combinations, because that was some of the talk. You remember when Rantanen got acquired, he'd been playing with a right-handed center in Nathan MacKinnon, and Rantanen is a left shot who plays on the right side, his offside. And there was talk that, well, maybe Rantanen just works better with a right shot center because that's who he played with. And the Stars, you know, he played with Hintz a little bit, especially in the playoffs that first run. But this past year, we saw he pretty much, once he started playing with Wyatt Johnston, who's a right shot center like MacKinnon, that's pretty much what stuck. And Rantanen was very careful when I asked him about that. He said, well, there's more that goes into it. And I asked a couple other players too, and they were all very cautious, but they do have preferences. And some players' games are better adapted to both play with a center or a wing of a certain handedness or playing type. And as you say, some players are much better on the wing than they are in center or even on their off wing. We saw it with Matt Duchesne last year. The Stars tried him on the wing for a little while, even on the top line. You'd think put him with Johnston and Rantanen, that should be a super combo, given how skilled those three are. It did not work at all. and right. they tried. It did not work at all. So yes, I think you're totally right. They need to figure out what the winger plan will be. I personally think there's a world in which Wyatt Johnson is actually a great winger. And if they had another right shot center to put with Rantanen, that's a really viable option to move Johnson on the wing a little bit more. But without another real like top right shot center to play with Rantanen, it's just not feasible right now. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But those are absolute considerations. I 100% agree.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Parker Allen kicks us off and he says, I think the best package for Robo, if we can't get Werenski, by the way, Zach Werenski, Elliot Friedman reports, one of the best in the biz, that Werenski and the Columbus Blue Jackets will sit down after the draft and have discussions. I'm going to stop right there for a second. If Zach Werenski for Robertson, I would do it. I mean, I'm the guy, that's your Norris Trophy winner. That's special. That's just me. I think that gives you the defensive depth you need. That is an amazing defensive core. If you're talking four, are, you know, Haskinen, Lindell, Harley, Werenski. I mean, everyone drops down. I don't think that's going to happen. But once again, I like how Parker's thinking. That's, you know, think high. But he also says, would it be better to get high ceiling young players, NHL ready prospects, rather than a lesser older player like Larkin or just picks? He gave some examples for San Jose, Montreal, Philadelphia, and asked for our thoughts on that. Robert, do you like the young guns coming in, or do you want an older piece with a win now mentality where they are?
If you're the Stars, you need to know that you have some help for right now coming back. That, like you mentioned at the top of the show with Greg Wyshynski tweeting out today about the Stars looking for kind of a Rantanen type return. To Carolina's credit, Logan Stankoven has fit great there, and they even moved him to center, and he's fit great there. I mean, he played center, you know, obviously earlier in his career, but I don't think the Carolina Hurricanes were even expecting Stankoven to be, you know, one of the leading scorers in a Stanley Cup playoff run, right? That was a big bonus for them. So I think the Carolina Hurricanes always were kind of, once they realized Rantanen wasn't going to resign, they were resigned to taking at least a short-term step back for a year or two. And instead, they end up winning the Cup, you know, just over a year after that trade. The Stars, similarly, I don't think the Stars can really afford to take a step back, especially, you know, Rantanen and Hintz are, you know, going to be 30 here pretty soon. There's a lot of players, you know, Duchesne, how many years is he going to still be a really, really productive player? Hopefully for another three while he's signed, but that's no guarantee. The Stars really need to make sure they don't waste any of these years. And losing Robertson for draft picks or young players, even if those players might grow into something, that's a risk. Hoping that you can flip some of that for something, very possible, but that's a risk. This is why I actually think a possibility, if you're Jim Nill, is a three-way trade, where maybe you get Larkin from Detroit and you get some young assets from someone else. Not saying Larkin is a one-to-one, you know, replacement for Robertson. And again, he plays center more, so he's not really, he doesn't solve a lot of problems for them. He does bring a lot of speed, and everyone loves to talk about that. That's obviously part of why Washington acquired, you know, Jordan Kyrou like they did. They want some of that speed, and Alex Tuck too, I should say. So speed is important, and teams have all the metrics and tracking data and stuff that show, oh, we need this, and the Stars definitely could use some more speed. I think we would all agree on that. But to me, a three-way trade is the easiest way for Dallas to both help the team right now and to get the biggest possible package for Robertson. They're just so complicated. It's hard to see how that could work, but you know, Stars have done big three-way trades before. I think, as I recall, actually the Rantanen trade was a three-way trade with some cap retention in there.
Yeah.
Was it Chicago or whatever with Carolina? So they've done it before. It could definitely happen. And for my money, that actually might make more sense than a team like San Jose that really only has younger assets
Right.
Even if you think it's someone that could help now, I think it's more likely that the Stars look to get someone who can help right now, a really good player, as well as some other draft capital and stuff. So that'd be my guess. Depends on what's out there, but the market should be as robust as it's ever going to be for someone like Jason Robertson.
One trade I am interested in, well, a couple. I do like Mason McTavish, and I do like Will Smith and one of those top 10 picks.
Will Smith. Yeah, that's a guy. I mean, we saw him trade Eklund, so I don't know they'd trade Smith also.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're San Jose, it's interesting trying to figure out what San Jose is going to do. There are some big players that are going to hit the market, and not this year, but in the coming years. So you wonder if San Jose is prepping for some really big moves in free agency, since they kind of willingly said, okay, we'll take some more draft capital for now.
Yeah, and move off. I agree.
Lastly, you mentioned Werenski at the top of that question. That meeting with Columbus, is there any way that meeting isn't Werenski saying, hey, this is me officially letting you know you don't have to trade me right now, but I'm not going to re-sign in 2 years? Like, it kind of feels like that's what all these guys from Team USA have done, right? That's probably what Hellebuck's essentially done. And teams know, you know, the more time that another team can get that player for, the larger a trade return will be. So the problem is, Werenski, that isn't going to happen until after the draft, whereas the Stars probably need to decide on Jason Robertson, you know, by Monday at the latest when qualifying offers are due, and then he would be open for an offer sheet. So I don't think the Werenski-Robertson timeline works, but it wouldn't shock me if the Stars, you know, let's say Thomas Harley has another down year and the Blue Jackets, you know, keep Werenski for another year. Is that a deal that you start to think about?
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, Werenski would be approaching 30. So again, you're giving up a lot of age, and I suspect defenseman contracts are going to be way, way higher then. But I don't know. You can get pie in the sky in these things, but
yeah. I think one of the storylines, we all celebrated USA winning the Olympics first time since 1980. I don't know if we knew the closeness of the team likes coming out now. I mean, we knew, you know, they had a great relationships, but now after hearing that, oh, I want to play with this, I want to play with that, it's clear that this USA team had a very tight bond.
You know, yes, they absolutely did. It's interesting though. There's another way to look at it. You know, we talked about the politics and stuff coming out of it when you have, you know, Cash Patel and you're invited into the locker room by Bill Guerin to celebrate with them. Obviously that added a political element to things that, you know, to some people that didn't affect anything, to other people that kind of put a shadow over things. But not just that, now you also have some of the fallout of players, you know, Hellebuck, Tkachuk, players leaving, whether Canadian teams or less competitive teams, to go to their preferred markets. And that's another thing we're all talking about, it is fallout from the Olympics. So I'm fascinated to see, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years from now, how that USA gold medal is viewed in retrospect, because I think there's going to be a lot more of a complicated view of it than maybe just the initial kind of thrill. And personally, this is really, really the kind of grouch in me. Winning a gold medal at 3-on-3. Meh. Sure. I mean, I get you won, but is it much better than winning in a shootout? I don't know. Not really for me. So
no,
just my two cents.
I agree.
US, you know, any gold medal in the Olympics, huge deal. And the men's and women's both winning the same year, great story for the USA, but that's just the little grouch.
It's exciting, especially when you're on the winning end. But I mean, I would love to see a pure goal 5-on-5 and/or a power play goal or
something. Come on, it's the right thing to do. It's the way it should be.
Yep. Right, because no one complains in the NHL like playoffs, like, oh my god, it should be 3-on-3 right now. No, people are standing on their feet, like, I can't believe it's the second overtime. This is crazy.
You never get that Colin Blackwell goal 2 years ago against Colorado if it's 3-on-3.
Wow,
never. You don't get that. Right. You don't get the who's it? Was it Robidaugh or Nordstrom, I think, had a goal like 20 years ago against, I think it was San Jose in overtime in that OA run.
Brendan Morrow from Stefan Robidaugh, which was on a power play, and a young Gavin Spittle was in the audience going crazy.
Yep. You had that big goal in game 6. And I think earlier in that series, because I think like 3 or 4 games in that series went to overtime, if not more.
Yeah.
And then there was one or two others, I think, also that overtime goals the Stars scored that also, at least one of them, I'm sure was a depth defense, but I have to go look at it. Anyway, it's just interesting to contemplate how many fewer narratives you get when it's 3-on-3.
This is going to be a sidebar, but I want people
This whole podcast is kind of a sidebar, and I'm loving it.
The whole podcast is a sidebar, but that's okay, right?
Oh, it's great.
It's spits and suds.
Yeah.
So at that game, which I'm and I asked Marty Turco about this, and he knew Nabokov was on. Nabokov knew Turco was on. They had to actually go to replay twice to see if not the puck, if the mitt went over the line. Because of the one timer and how the mitt went back, and both times it was called a no goal because the puck could not be seen. The saves that both made in that game, still to this day, it's the greatest game I happen to be at in person. I could not believe what I was watching. It was unreal. The crowd that was still there, I felt so bad. I mean, I think that thing, I'll have to look it up. I mean, it was wee into the morning. It was in the AMs when it ended. So, yeah, because it was a late start.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was fortunate. I was watching on TV. I mean, I wasn't as fortunate as you as being at the game, that there's no, you're never going to be at a better hockey game than that, right? Yeah. You might be at one as good, but that's as good as it gets. And I'm extremely jealous you were there. I was fortunate that I was on the West Coast. And even then, it was super late watching it 2 hours earlier. So I can't imagine how. Well, I can't imagine because we've all heard the stories, but just incredible. I talked to Toby Peterson a little bit about that game too, because he was in that game too last year. I'm still working on a long-term project to talk to as many people who played in that game as possible.
Oh, nice.
We'll see how that comes together. But it's, man. And again, 3-on-3, you don't get any of that, right?
Yeah.
Does that game go even 2 overtimes at 3-on-3? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. What are we doing?
I can't wait to go back to Texas to talk to Toby. I really enjoyed that interview. And boy, it was so great to see him laughing and smiling and telling old stories.
Great guy. Great guy.
Yeah, great guy. All right. Marsha G. Marsha, thank you so much for listening and supporting this program. Wish we could get the kid from Allen. Spits and Suds JP Hobert really enjoyed learning about his journey. Yeah, that was a fun interview we did earlier this year. By the way, yesterday the CHL came out, and on third team all-star was JP Hobert. Now, to understand the CHL, I'm probably going to forget a league. It is the OHL. It is the WHL. It is the QMJHL. Yeah, absolutely. So a ton of players to be a third all-star and also make the all-rookie team. Kudos to Allen's own JP Hobert. Talking to our friend David Castillo, who's great at the draft and looking at prospects, he actually thinks Hobert might fall to the second round. If he falls, I'm going to be kicking myself as a Stars fan, because I want one of those late first back if he falls like that. But I think Hobert's going to go anywhere from 15 to about 22. I think someone's going to take him.
That's every mock draft I've seen has him there. I'd be really shocked. The criticisms of Hobert are just that his environment maybe is inflating some of his point totals, and that maybe in a tougher environment in the NHL, some of what he does wouldn't work as well. At least that's what I've read. I don't profess to have watched a ton of tape, and we've all seen the highlight reels and stuff. But everything I've seen says you're probably right that Hobert probably goes in that range. Things can always change, but with how well scouted everything is, I tend to put a lot of stock in what people like Scott Wheeler say, because they've been doing this for a long time and they talk to a lot of people. So it when a player drops, it's usually for a really specific reason. And I just don't know that Hobert has enough that could cause him to drop as far as the second round. But hey,
right.
You never know. You never know. Sometimes there's narratives out there that everyone's quiet about, and then we find out about him when a player drops way, way back. Joe Valeno, I think this happened years ago. So he was projected to be an early first round pick and went till I think the end of the round or even the second round. So it happens sometimes.
Yeah, we'll see. It certainly does. Now, I'm not saying bet the mortgage, because then you'll have to live with Robert or myself, but I think JP Hobert is going to attend University of Michigan, and they have they're going to be a wagon with the prospects they have coming in. They haven't won a national title since 1998. But if I do go to Vegas, that's going to be a bet that I'm going to make. University of Michigan for the national championship. And Hurlburt will be a proud part of.
I think Landon DuPont just committed to Michigan too, didn't he?
He sure did.
Presumptive number one pick next year. So
sure did. Yeah,
that team's going to be pretty stacked, you'd think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. A little spits and suds tidbit for you guys. Okay, Jordan H. at Harper Hockey Fan. Jordan, thank you so much for being a Spits and Suds faithful north of the border. Appreciate you. Would you consider a robo trade to the Sharks, pick two and Will Smith? Yes. I would rather a package with a proven right-handed D, but that package doesn't seem to be available. Since there's a lot of robo, like, would you consider this? Robert, what are you personally looking for? What makes Robert Tiffin happy in a Robertson package if a trade were to happen? Or are you just happy, like, you know, taking the four first rounders in the next 5 years, starting in 2027?
Anaheim is a team that I keep coming back to as a team that seems like a good match for Robertson trade in a lot of ways. You'd think, being a Southern California guy, that, you know, and a team that, you know, is now starting to reach the playoffs and stuff, plays pretty up tempo, that they could be a fit for Robertson and someone that he'd be willing to extend with, which would make him as valuable as possible in trade, right? If a team knows he's going to sign a long-term extension with them. They also have some good young players. Mason McTavish, you know, getting healthy scratch in the playoffs and stuff. He's fallen off since his first year. He was being talked about, you know, kind of alongside Wyatt Johnston in some circles a couple of years back, but he took a real step back this year. And you'd have to be really confident that there's more there, given that he already signed his $7 million, you know, what, he had 6 or 7 years left on that big deal he signed out of his ELC. So Olin Zellweger, there's other players there that really interest me. Again, though, and they have some draft capital too. That's a trade partner that I think you can start to see. Maybe these players could fit in pretty quickly to Dallas, or at least one of them, along with some draft capital. And they're a team that pretty clearly wants to start competing. Pat Verbeek also has not been afraid to make aggressive moves, as we saw with John Carlson last year, GM of the Ducks. So that's a team that I keep coming back to is, man, you'd think there's at least enough of a foundation for a serious discussion of a deal there. But given Mason McTavish, I don't know. I'm a little wary about that deal just because you don't know exactly what happened. And similarly, like with San Jose moving on from Eklund, sometimes teams that start to move on from these players, they know things, or they've seen enough and they say, we just don't believe in this guy, right? Same thing with Bowen Byram. Like, he's now in his, what, third team? And he wants a number one shot. I tend to think that after a certain point, you earn your number one shot on the blue line. And if he hasn't gotten it by now, maybe there's something there. We'll see. Now it's up to Chicago to prove everyone wrong and show, yep, this guy was just waiting to be the number one all along. He can do it. And we'll see. But for me, to answer your original question, which I realize I didn't totally do, you need some help now. I wouldn't hate it if it were a younger player, so long as they're an NHL player right this second, and preferably someone who can at least play on your second power play. Because you got to replace goals. Losing Robertson's goals is going to be a huge problem for Dallas if they don't replace him. And I don't think Dylan Larkin can replace all that production. In fact, I don't think he can even replace a lot of it.
To your point, do you say then, if you're the Stars at $10.5 million on a long-term deal, we need a bounce back Thomas Harley pretty quick, because we're paying a guy $10.5 million and he's a second line defenseman and he doesn't lead our power play?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think selling on Harley now, though, is selling so low that we have all seen what he's done at Four Nations and the Olympics and playoffs in 2025. He's a stud defenseman. I mean, he on a lot of teams, he would be their number one guy today if he were traded to them. And And I just think his cap number is going to look much, much more reasonable a year from now when Cale Makar's new deal happens, for instance. I really do think, not that he's Cale Makar, but just the market's going to shift a lot. I think everyone believes that. I think that's a reason Dallas signed him to that big 10.587 annual value, because they see the market shifting.
Yeah,
but you need a bounce back from him. And the good thing about Harley is that his trade production, because he's so young, his trade production doesn't kick in for another couple of years. So if he does have another down year, sure, maybe his trade value goes down a bit, but Dallas gets more information and they can really decide, okay, is it just a, he either has to play with Haskinen or he's not a top defenseman and maybe we overpaid a little, or is it a, oh, maybe that was just, this is who he is now and we have to live with that and decide what to do. So we'll see what they do. But my concern for Harley is very minimal right now, just because what we've seen him do so far, I think they're better off betting on keeping him going forward.
Belfour's Billions Bribe also asked about Will Smith and second overall, which we touched on. And he does ask if it weakens their cup aspirations. I will say Will Smith's a center. So I'm not sure about his flexibility, but Will Smith's certainly proven that he can play in this league. So that's a little bit different as far as joining a contender. Just a really, really solid player. Good pedigree coming out of Boston College. That said, I don't know why San Jose is flipping, because if they flip, exactly. You're right, Robert. If they flip Eklund and they flip Will Smith, you're just like, okay, what's going on in San Jose? Because remember,
yeah, they just went out and got Kiefer Sherwood last year. Like, yeah. What are you trying to do exactly? Yeah.
Yeah. You remember Mike Greer is a very, very smart GM. I had him, you know, last year as a top five or six Jim Gregory candidate for the bounce back year they've had and for the draft capital that they've collected. I like his moves this offseason, but at some point, you have to remember you need to keep Macklin Celebrini happy. And if you keep selling off these young parts, you know, you better get something in return. Maybe Jason Robertson could be that return. But thank you, Belfour Billions. Really appreciate the support.
Really quickly on that, too. Yeah. The second overall pick for San Jose, you can use that to try to get someone like Robertson. Why wouldn't you just draft Ivor Stenberg with that number two pick and keep Will Smith?
Correct.
Like Stenberg is someone who very much profiles as someone who could grow into a not, and he's not the exact same profile as Robertson, but he's very, very skilled and that he's going to be cheap for a long time. Why wouldn't you just do that? To me, that's by far the more logical thing to do, unless you're getting a huge package. Whereas using the second overall as part of a package, even someone like Robertson, I don't think that would make sense for San Jose. They just seem to have been a team that's much, much more cagey about how they're stockpiling things. I think they're going to wait to spend a lot of their money in free agency and, you know, a couple of years down the road when some really big names might start to be available, rather than going out and getting Robertson and, like you said, emptying some of the cupboard right now. But who knows? Right. I'm sure they wouldn't mind Robertson, especially if they can lock him up for a while. That's certainly a good trade to make. I just don't see that second and one of their best young players being part of it.
Clara X Barton. Good to hear from you, Clara. Robert, are the 99 jerseys going to be the home jerseys next season or remain the beloved third jersey option?
So anytime we went through this all last year, went before the 99s were released, the team was very, very cagey about jersey stuff. They really like to announce this stuff and make it a big fanfare. So they're very careful not to leak stuff out about jersey news. So
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
So to be clear, I don't know. But what I do know is that in 1999, the Dallas Stars won the Stanley Cup wearing the star pattern jerseys that the current 99 third jerseys are, you know, are based on. Those were their third jerseys that year when the Stars won the Cup in 1999. They were their third jerseys. They won the Cup and because they wore them on the road that year in that Cup run. Yeah. And then they made them their primaries in 99, 2000, the following year. the Stars wore the 99s as their primary home jerseys in the playoffs this year. And then they got bounced in the first round. So I'm not sure that they quite have the same. Everyone loved them. Obviously, we all know the sales numbers were off the charts. I think they set all sorts of records for, you know, fastest selling NHL jersey and all this stuff. They're great. I think everyone really likes the design. But I don't know that they're quite ready to do that just yet. They could. Yeah. It's definitely possible. To be clear, it's possible. I think the fact that the Stars had their shortest playoff run in actually 5 years, because they actually took Calgary to 7 games back in 22. So it's actually been their shortest playoff run since 2021 when they missed. So I think that might affect things a little bit, but it wouldn't surprise me. They're obviously very beloved, but I think they want to keep the Victory Green very heavily part of the branding too. So the safer option to me is keep them as a third. There's no downside to doing that, really.
I would love to see the Stadium Series sweater back that they wore in the Winter Classic, because that was really popular, and I don't think it was worn enough.
So it's my favorite still. It still is my favorite.
Yeah. What if they came out, Robert, and they said, here's our jersey, and instead it's the same jersey, but instead of a D, it has a P. For Plano.
That's pretty good.
Brad Albert, I'm trademarking that.
Yeah.
I don't think that would go over well.
Gavin's doing some brand consultant work here if you want to toss him a commission. We do know that we'll be seeing another jersey this year for the Stadium Series.
Yeah, absolutely.
In February. So there will be another jersey of some kind. I just don't see them getting rid of the Victory Green at home completely. I guess the 99s have a little bit of accent stuff here and there, but I just think, well, I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to get over my skis. So we know we'll see a Stadium Series jersey. We don't know what that's going to be. I'm sure the Stars will try to announce that themselves rather than leak it out. But sometimes these things do leak out. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, we will see a new jersey this year for sure. I haven't heard anything definitive about them, establishing a new home sweater. So we'll see.
Great question, Clara. All right, Michael, thank you so much. You're such a great Spits and Suds fan. I truly appreciate your teamwork. He says, Gavin and Robert, at what point are conversations had with players on no trade clauses? Thinking of someone like Tyler Seguin, because if this was one season forward, we have all the space we need. As we don't want to lose anybody, it's very evident that players want to maximize their contracts, which they should. Therefore, the Stars should have tough conversations with people. I don't know what in TCS, right?
No trade clauses. Yeah.
Okay.
Here's what I'll say about all that stuff. I've had a lot of people who comment or email me or DM me or whatever saying, man, why did the Stars were just giving out all these no trade clauses like candy and no move clauses or whatever. And to be clear, those are part of the compensation package and they come with consideration. So in nearly every case, unless it's like a Miro Heiskanen or whatever, where they can pretty much almost dictate terms, that allows the team to keep the cap hit a little bit lower, because that's a good thing the player is getting. So then the team expects a little bit of compensation in return.
Correct.
So those things are part of a negotiation. They're not handed out like candy. They allow a team to keep the cap hit a little bit lower, usually. In Tyler Seguin's case, that was kind of what you read. Jamie Benn had the same thing. Full no move, full no trade. Same thing for Seguin. When you're signing a franchise player to the max 8-year extension, that's what you do. That's what they command, because those players know full well that later in the deal, they're less likely to be performing at their peak, and teams will be more likely to want to trade them. And players don't want to go to whatever team is willing to pick up the last year of that deal or two in their mid 30s and relocate or whatever. So players very much want the trade protection at the end. Now, that doesn't happen in every case. Matt Duchene's contract, for instance, it changes. I believe he has a full no move for the first 2 years. I should probably look this up. Full no move for the first 2 years, and then it changes to a partial no trade for the second. He has a 5-team trade to list in his final 2 years in Dallas. Yeah. So that's still very heavily restricted, but it's not the same as a full, you know, no move. So Duchene's deal is one where the Stars do have a little bit of flexibility there. If they did want to move on from it, not this year, but starting next summer, the Stars could do that if they wanted to. But with the big franchise players, Haskinen, Hintz, Sagan, Rantanen, you're just not going to. It's only to the player's always going to want the full no move at the end. The team, right, of course, would love to not have it there, but that's just not how negotiations tend to work.
And by the way, sometimes we need to think about the other side. In Matt Duchene's case, absolutely, I am for this because Matt Duchene committed 2 years on one-year deals.
At $3 million.
And yes, exactly. He could have made a lot more money on the open market.
Less than Labushkin and Dumba were making on their contract.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Moved his family here, loves the city. The Nashville thing was really tough on him. He wanted to live in Nashville, and he embraces the community. So for that reason, I do like that. And I think in Sagan and Duchene's case, Matt Duchene has earned his 4-year contract here. And I understand what people are saying about Tyler Sagan, but it's not as if the play on the ice, when available on the ice, has deteriorated to a level. Before Tyler Sagan got injured, he was having a really solid year. I'm not saying he's the Tyler Sagan of old with 90 or 100 points, but that is one of my keys to this year. I know it's a long shot, but if Tyler Sagan can stay healthy and he's on that line with Matt Duchene, that's a really good line. Tyler Sagan is a 20-plus goal scorer and has turned into not an excellent or, two-way player, but a much better defensive forward. So, we all forget, and rightfully so because he's been injured, but I think Tyler Sagan deserved the contract at that time as well as the no movement.
Yeah, he was I wrote about this yesterday. You go back to 2018 when that was signed. That was also the same offseason when John Tavares was leaving New York and going through that whole, the suitors were coming into town and presenting their argument for why he should sign with them in free agency. And he ended up signing in Toronto for 7 years, I believe, at $11 million. So Sagan signed for $9.85 million to stay in Dallas. And obviously Tavares, has been healthier during that term than Sagan. But PS sure hasn't gone as deep in the playoffs as Sagan has with Dallas. So
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You look, it's how it works, right? When you're that important of a player, and you go back to 2018, who did the Stars really have coming up, right? Like, Pope Hintz hadn't really broken into the league yet in that September of 18 when Sagan signed before that season. Wyatt Johnson hadn't been drafted. Jason Robertson was eons away from debuting for the Stars. Everything was so different back then, and it's really important. That's why I wrote so much about it. You really have to get back to understand what the context was when that deal was signed to give a fair criticism. That's not saying you shouldn't be critical of an organization. Yeah. You should just try to take as much of the context into account as possible. And the last thing I'll say about Matt Duchene is the other thing about the final 2 years of his contract, even if that heavy trade protection that he has, even if you struggle to find a deal, it's also structured in such a way where a buyout is pretty easy for the Stars to, easy, quote unquote, but a buyout is very possible for the last year or two of Duchene. If his production totally dropped off a cliff for some reason, the Stars do have multiple kind of ways they could deal with that contract if it really, really went south that they weren't able to do with players like Sagan. So they're always looking at these things. It's just about how much leverage you have in the negotiations. So give them as much credit as they deserve, not more, but not less either.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be good to have Sagan back in the locker room, by the way, as a room guy.
Oh, my gosh. He's great. I'm biased in terms of interpersonal interactions. He's candid and confident and easygoing and also like tough when he has to be, and critical when the team doesn't play well. You're absolutely right. He makes a big difference in that room.
All right. Mark D. Zimmerman says, question for Robert. The Stars have spent years trying to balance left, right defenseman pairs, but quality right-handed defenseman is costly. Would Dallas be better served by leaning into their strength at left D and just make sure that they have the best defenders available?
Mark is an old pal, so I'm always glad to hear from him. And this dovetails with when I quote tweeted your initial call for questions, Gavin. Someone asked me a similar question about what would you say. Well, they didn't realize it was a similar question, but they said, what would you say Nil's worst move or one of his worst moves has been? And I would say they kind of overlap. The right D thing, since John Klingberg, the Stars really haven't been able to develop an in-house right-handed D. Nils Lundqvist is the closest thing to that, but they had to trade a first-round pick for to get him from the Rangers back in 2022. So the Stars have yet to really bring up another right-handed D themselves who can play in the NHL as a big-time player. That's why they made what I think are some of the bigger mistakes by Nil in the Lyubushkin and Dumba contracts being signed when they were, right after the Ryan Suter buyout. Chris Tanev then didn't come back. That those moves just there was some use at the time. They were trying to get Miro Heiskanen on a strong side, and so you need a righty to pair with him. They thought Dumba might be able to do that at a cheap value. He obviously didn't. And Lyubushkin has actually been a decent role player, but with their cap the way it is, you would have liked to have a cheaper player to be able to do what Lyubushkin's been doing, just in a vacuum, right? I actually like Lyubushkin for his role. I just think the cap hit was always going to be a problem, and this is probably the summer when the Stars have to do something about it. So that's probably been one of Nils' biggest missteps. So to Mark's question, should the Stars just say, you know what, forget trying to pay a premium to get a right-handed D. They cost a ton. Cale Makar is going to make, what, like $18 million or something as next deal. So yeah. Just get lefties and tell them to figure it out, right? Heiskanen can play on his offside, get someone else to play on their offside. And honestly, you might have to do that. Right. Maybe you talk to Lean Bischel and Thomas Harley, can both skate really well. Is there a point where you ask one of them, hey, can you play on your right side too? And now we're only having to figure out your third pair with a righty. And those are players that are affordable, right? Alex Petrovic. There are players like that you can usually get who can handle third pair minutes, and they shouldn't be that expensive. In a vacuum, in retrospect, by the way, Stars would have been probably better off not signing Lyubushkin, but just having Petrovic start the NHL back in 2024, right? In a vacuum, that would have been probably the better way to go. But they didn't know that Petrovic still had that in him at the time, even after that brief playoff run the spring before. Blah. So yeah, that's a long-winded answer, but yeah, I think that's something you have to look at if you're the Stars, just because at a certain point, those players are so rarely available. And if you can't draft them, acquiring them costs so much, and they don't have that many assets to do it anymore. So
right.
Unless you're going to get really lucky and get a player off waivers or something, and magically turn them into that player, or get a fifth round pick who hits like Klingberg did way back in the day. Yeah, you probably have to figure out another solution. And that probably means someone like Bischel or Harley has to figure that out. So we'll see if they do that. 2 years ago in training camp, I keyed in on the fact that Bischel played with Lindell, and Lindell was actually the player who played on his offside on the right side. So maybe as Lindell, you know, has another few years left on his deal, but as he gets older, maybe they look at that. If you put Harley up with Heiskanen and say, does Lindell and Bischel become a second pairing maybe at some point in the coming years? Again, this all assumes Lundqvist isn't going to be a second pairing righty, which he looks like he could very much be. And then that's not as big of a problem anyway, if Lundqvist can keep doing what he kind of did when he was healthy last year. So maybe Lundqvist makes all of this discussion moot. How's that for an answer?
I would love to see the Stars put in their playbook with the puck moving defensemen they have. I'd love to see a more aggressive Heiskanen, which I've always wanted. I think Nils Lundqvist, when he carries the puck out of the zone, he's very quick. And I'd love to see Harley that as well. I think adding to that rush, having a defenseman like that, especially since we're seeing it more and more in the NHL. So I would like to see the Stars add that to their arsenal. I will say late in the season and in that playoff series, and unfortunately he wasn't fully healthy, I saw a more offensive Miro Heiskanen in kind of a take charge, some slap shots from the point. I really like that from him. Did want to stick on the blue line for a second. It's not a question from, but did want to talk. Luke Chris signs a 2-year, two-way contract, stays with the Stars. This is a kid who had a really, really tough injury, came back. He was just getting back when Robert and I went down to Texas. Just played really, really well. Steven Meserve was talking about Luke Kris. So great to have him in the organization for two more years. And Kyle Capobianco signed a two-year one-way contract. So just so everyone knows, two-year two-way is a little bit different, but not a whole bit different. Basically, Kyle Capobianco makes an NHL salary if he's down in Texas or if he's up with the Dallas Stars. That is a one-way. The other thing is that Capobianco will have to clear waivers if he goes back down to Texas. Mm-hmm. Is there anything
which
else?
Which he did last year, which Capobianco did last year. So he profiles as a player who probably still could, right? Would pass through waivers. It's also the case that Jim Neal was respected enough to where I actually think that's a part of the calculus sometimes for GMs that look, taking another, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth defenseman from another team, one who probably isn't likely to magically turn into like a second pairing NHL D-man, right? Taking another team's depth player. It happens sometimes if it's like a younger player with potential. We saw Vladislav Kolyachonik get claimed off waivers last year by Boston briefly. But even that's one where the Stars kind of knew that was a possibility and teams understand this with later, with older, just to be blunt, with older players like this, it's less likely for them to get claimed on waivers. So I think it's a lot more likely that Capobianco can go back down through waivers, which means his cap hit wouldn't then affect the Stars NHL salary cap until he's recalled, which he might be pretty soon. I thought he was great last year in his role.
He was.
I actually thought Kolyachonik was too in his role. And kind of to the point we were talking about right-handed defensemen, someone like Capobianco, who can also skate pretty well, when you have that depth, I don't know that Luke Kris necessarily can become a Alex Petrovic who can kind of play third pairing minutes in the NHL. I like Luke Kris. He's been a really important player for Texas. He was a top pairing defenseman for them last year and will be probably for another couple of years. He is a righty. But at this point in his career, I don't know when he might get a shot with Dallas, just to be blunt. Do they bring back Alex Petrovic? That's certainly still a possibility until we see otherwise. It's just all these things are connected and you have to kind of have plans A, B, C, D, and E. And bringing back Capobianco, especially to me, feels like a really good piece of depth to have. And it's also a known quantity for Dallas. And those are always really good things too. I'm a big Kyle Capobianco fan in his role.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He played very valuable minutes. Do you buy into the Sean Shapiro theory that if Jim Neal is quoted with the player, that is a good sign for the player?
Yes, it usually that's the distinction between, you know, if a player is likely to be on the NHL roster at some point or not. If Jim Neal quotes something, it has a quote in the press release. For this press release, if I recall from reading it last night, Neal does have a quote about Capobianco and not for Luke Kris, right?
Not Luke Kris.
So, which makes sense. Kris is still, you know, like you said, it's a two-way deal. So there's an NHL number. Yeah. There are also AHL-only deals that don't have any NHL deal in there, which means that if the Stars were to want to call a player up, they actually need to sign him to an NHL deal before they call him up. So it's still possible, but that they don't always have any sort of NHL contract players that are in the AHL. So that's an important distinction too. So we'll see what happens, but good, sensible move, ones that don't necessarily affect any of the Stars' current cap plans, but it does give them depth at both the NHL and AHL.
Shout out to Chris Howard, who just had a funny statement. What exactly is happening with Texas hockey right now? LOL. So kudos, Chris, stick tap to you for listening. And the Whiskey Diaries, with all the robo talk, let's pivot to something Robert will love to talk about. Cameron Schmidt.
Hey,
what's your thoughts on his strides as a prospect this season? Is his game going to translate to the NHL? Obviously, too early to tell. But it's the silly season of fun questions. One thing I'll point out that I asked Sean about regarding junior hockey is that don't panic when a player is traded. For instance, Cameron Schmidt has played on multiple teams.
Mm-hmm.
He's played on Vancouver. He's played on Seattle. And there was another one I think he's played on. But I think he had a good year. Me personally, I know this question's for Robert. But me personally, I want to see, it's interesting. I don't know. Give me your thoughts on Cameron Schmidt.
Yeah, I talked to him last year one-on-one at development camp. I'm really, really fascinated to see him at development camp next week. I assume he'll be there for Dallas when they have development camp next this coming up this next week. So I'm curious to see, one, if he's grown at all, because obviously his height has been is the easiest talking point. His scoring is great. He's been scoring at very consistently, even after you mentioned the trade to Seattle. His scoring didn't miss a beat. His skill very much travels in the WHL. So that's a good sign that it's not just, oh, he was playing on a good team or had, you know, a great line mate or something. The what was it, Remy Ellie, who was playing with Connor McDavid back in the day or something, like Stars prospect. Sometimes you have to take those things into account. For my money, Cameron Schmidt is exactly where you'd hope he would still be. The big question, as always, is what's it going to look like when he tries to make the jump to pro?
That's what I was going to say. You're right.
Like, we saw Emil Hemming, right? He got, the Stars were able to give him a cameo in the AHL because of where he was drafted from. The new rules, I'd have to check them when they kick in, but there will be some ability for NHL teams to have one or two players, I think, on AHL contracts. I really should have looked that up before we did this podcast, but there's going to be some flexibility. He would also be a player that, you know, he probably has one more year in juniors. Cameron Schmidt does. I think he's 19 right now. So sure, go and blow the doors off of juniors for one more year, but then you're going to have to make the pro leap. Or if there's the ability to do so, again, it's something I should have looked up beforehand. But if the Stars have an ability to give him an AHL cameo like they did with Emil Hemming, that's only a good thing. But that's why I'm really curious to see him at development camp and how he looks around what will surely be some bigger players and even some players that have probably a little bit more experience, just to see what he looks like in that environment, because there's no question he's great in juniors. There's a reason teams want to trade for him in juniors, right? Because he's proven he can do it there. It's just a matter of how is that leap to pro going to go? Because we know that jump, you know, our pal Steven Meserve always says that jump to AHL from juniors to the AHL is the biggest jump, even bigger than AHL to NHL. That's such a big jump for a player. Yeah. So that's the real question for me right now. Still profiles as a player who could end up being really good value. He's what, a third round pick, I think. So if the Stars end up getting any NHL games out of a third round pick, I think it's a win. And with Cameron Schmidt, the upside's even higher than that, right? If his scoring is able to translate, he's not quite Logan Stankoven in the same way, but there are some obvious similarities in some ways because of the size and scoring ability. So if he can be even something in the NHL, that's a big win for Dallas. And right now, there's no reason not to think that that's still possible. But of course, the biggest thing to prove will probably happen when he makes the pro leap a year from now.
Well, I think there's the good news for Dallas Stars fans. There are some interesting names down in Texas to keep your eye on. He's certainly one of them. I am interested in Luke Chris. I'm also interested in the development of Trey Taylor makes another year in the AHL. Listen, Dylan Ritzkovian came in and he was a big factor in their playoffs. He was playing top line minutes. So that's someone you have to watch out for. Justin's brother, you know, is another one. So, and Hemming's going to be interesting because he had the big year at Barry. Can it translate now into the AHL?
Exactly,
and I'm sure they'll give him every opportunity to thrive and surround him with good players. So, it's good to see some of these players, and obviously it would be cool to see Cameron Schmidt, you know, make the jump and be successful, but you're right, not always easy. Man, that was a lot of questions. Robert, you knocked it out of the park, sir. Hats are flying onto the ice. That was a hat trick performance. You know, what a terrific selly you're doing right now. So congratulations. You mentioned starsthoughts.com a couple of times.
Oh yeah.
You are producing great articles. Give us a little tease of what's coming up, and also plug Algorithmically Incorrect, the program you did yesterday. You had Steven Meserve on, I saw.
Yeah, we had Steven Meserve on to talk about the Texas expansion, the NHL expansion to Houston or Austin that came out of the Board of Governors meeting. That's something they're, you know, could be making a decision on as soon as 6 months from now. Obviously, the actual start of the team would be a few years away. So we had Steven on because there's really no, as you know, there's no better expert on hockey in Austin and South Texas than Steven Meserve. So it was kind of the perfect scenario. Sean and I had him on. He's obviously a really good pal too. We also had Cam Robinson live from Buffalo, where the NHL draft is, from Elite Prospects, to talk about all the moves and drafts and things like San Jose and things, you know, that are happening or could happen and why they might or might not happen. We have a bonus episode coming out that I won't spoil too much about, but talking with someone very, very involved in the draft and things like that. So that's coming out. Look for that in about within the next 24 hours. You will see that. So keep an eye out. If you're subscribed to Algorithmically Incorrect Hockey, you'll get that right away. And we might even have some draft content this weekend too, live from the draft, because our pal Sean is there in Buffalo now too. So keep an eye out. There's lots of stuff happening from Algorithmically Incorrect Hockey, and I suspect there may be some, wouldn't shock me if there's some breaking news that I'll be writing up at StarSots in the next day or two as well. So we'll see whether that's just draft picks or whether that's trades or signings. Obviously, we see, you know, even what Matthew Semenoff just got re-signed.
Yeah, terrific signing. That's another player to watch. What a great jump he had with the Texas Stars this past year.
Yeah, so there's a lot. I'm going to be writing. I've been trying to keep that four or five pretty much every weekday, even in the off season, going here for a while. So that'll go at least until July, when I'll try to give myself a little bit of a break just for sanity. But for now, we're going pretty much full bore, and I expect some more breaking news in the coming 7 days. So we'll see what happens. But yep, there you go.
That's going to be great. At Robert Tiffin. So follow him on Twitter/X. Great thoughts from Robert, as always. Thank you guys so much for your questions. StarsThoughts.com. Let's support our guys. Let's support the people that are making Dallas Stars hockey and putting the information out there, like Robert. So StarsThoughts.com. Please support his cause. It is a great story where there's so many people that are affiliated with different aspects of media, and Robert decided to take this initiative and go out on his own. And it's absolutely been amazing information. So I love that the local media is supporting Robert. And you know, we want to do it as well. So StarsThoughts.com. That's going to do it for another episode of Spits and Suds. Hopefully it lived up to what you guys were hoping for. I think it did. Boy, that was a fun episode. And thanks to Gregory Finley, our producer, and go on out and support the on-time experts, because boy, they help support Spits and Suds as the official HVAC and plumbing company of Spits and Suds. Until our next podcast, hopefully talking to Sean Shapiro tomorrow, live from Buffalo at the NHL draft. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. Thanks guys so much. Have a great day, everyone.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.